Hello, welcome back to the FitCast. This is episode number 344, and I got a special one for you this time, especially if you're in the fitness industry, whether you're a personal trainer or strength coach looking to open up your own facility or just have questions about the business side of things, because this episode I have someone that, you know, I would put at the top of my list in terms of people that I owe a hell of a lot to in terms of my spot in this industry right now and giving me a start interning at Cressy at the time, Cressy Performance, and now Cressy Sports Performance. That's Pete Dupuy. Pete, how you doing?
Good morning, Kev. Good to be on. Magic number 344. Quite an honor.
Yeah, it's a pretty good number. It's a good batting average. So
there you go.
We were kind of talking, going back and forth about getting you on the show because now you're creating content really for the industry and talking about the things that you do. And I think it might be best, and you could probably do a better job than I in terms of talking about this, but how did you get involved with, you know, the gym business?
Oh, the gym. All right. So I should say first and foremost, in the fall of 99, as I was heading off to college, I was attending business school, Babson College here locally. I was randomly assigned a roommate from Southern Maine, a gentleman named Eric Cressy.
All right.
And that is how I coincidentally was aligned with Eric from day one, because people are always asking, how'd you guys meet? How do you pick a business partner? All these questions as if there's a formula. And the long story short on that front is, the school decided that we were going to be roommates. We got a couple phone numbers and we exchanged calls relating to, you know, who was going to buy the mini fridge and did either of us have a TV, that sort of a deal. Eric obviously transitioned away from his dream of being a CPA as accounting became less interesting than, we'll say, exercise and fitness in general. And when he transferred out of our program after our sophomore year of college, we stayed in touch, but somewhat loosely, because he was in different parts of New England and he was pursuing a dramatically different career path. But we were always, I'd say, buddies via email and at the time AOL Instant Messenger. So that's how we stayed in touch until late 2006. So at that point in time, I was getting my MBA. I was back at Babson, actually. And Eric had just taken a job as an independent contractor at a facility in Waltham, which I believe I crossed paths with you there. It was a place called Excel. And Eric basically convinced me to come in, take a look, get a few lifts in during staff training time, and connect with some of those guys. And we spent probably 2-3 months of training in that kind of off-hours format. When the coaches were done working with athletes, they'd get their lift in, and I'd come in and just kind of socialize with that crew and lift with guys like you and Tony and
Dan Toledano.
Yeah, we go back to Dan. And I don't think Clark was there yet, but that scene. And I was basically the skinny soccer player who was afraid of the gym, mm-hmm. training alongside guys doing NFL combine prep and BC football players and guys. I remember there were a bunch of guys from Mount Ida trying to get their foot through the door for some combine stuff. And I got thrown into it in that setting, and as terrified as I was coming in, I ended up falling in love with it really quickly, seeing some quick results, because I was, I had to be about 150 pounds at 6'1", so there was a lot of opportunity for improvement. And as we went through the kind of the process of getting me integrated into the system and giving me an understanding of how it works, Eric's entrepreneurial nature that was kind of still deep down there led us to have ongoing conversations about how we thought we could tweak their model at Excel and possibly implement something that kind of closer to what you see today here at Cressy Sports Performance. And we did briefly approach them to open the lines of discussion about the two of us taking on a controlling ownership stake. And they weren't in a point where they were looking to give up the ultimate end all be all decision making over there. Mm-hmm. And they opted to say no to that. And soon thereafter, Eric and I made the decision, along with Tony Gentilcore, to open up this place. And God, the wheels got in motion pretty quickly. But it was July 13th of 2007 that we ultimately pulled the trigger on it. So we're kind of coming up on 8 years of me being able to technically say I've been in the fitness industry, but I still feel like an outsider of sorts since I don't have any certifications and I don't actually coach athletes.
Well, the kind of crazy thing is like, you know, even when I was interning there, the stuff that you just soak up through osmosis, whether it be, you know, you lifting and training, and also, you know, you go to these, you know, whether it's like Perform Better summits or the seminars that Eric's even putting on, you just soak up so much and you just kind of don't know it. And then if you need to, you can always jump on the floor and coach, worst case scenario.
Yeah, there was a period of time there where I think one of the things that we've gone out of our way to do is control our growth pattern in the sense that we're not overextending ourselves, taking on additional payroll or, you know, adding bodies when it's not absolutely justified. But what that ends up, basically what results from that mentality is occasionally your vice president and business director has to throw on the shirt and wander out onto the floor and teach some foam rolling, or, you know, be visible and perceived as a member of the coaching team. And it's only happened a handful of times over 8 years. But since we weren't overextending ourselves as far as trainers on the floor at some points in time when we were growing quicker than we realized, I got to throw that hat on and pretend I knew what I was doing, and enough staff lifts and you're going to be able to fake it till you make it on some level.
Well, yeah, so, you know, I talk about it a lot, but, you know, just trying to recognize like what good form is not super hard if you've been lifting consistently for years, especially in an environment like where you have, you know, Eric and Tony, and also, you know, at the time, like back then, Brian St. Pierre as your coaches, you're going to be in pretty good position to know what looks good.
Oh, absolutely. I think you get exposed to it enough, and that's the moment where you start walking around commercial gyms and feeling like you're seeing a lot of stuff that bugs you. And I know that actually my wife is the one who suddenly has become a little bit of an expert without realizing it, as she's always got critique, or I would say opinions relating to proper execution of exercises that she does think she keeps to herself other than discussions with me. But I guess she's become considerably more informed without realizing it, purely through that osmosis concept where she does 80% of her training here under our roof, but she occasionally finds herself in a Boston sports club or at an Equinox type of gym. And suddenly she realizes she could probably step on the training floor and take a stab at coaching at some point if she really wanted to.
Yeah, that's the fitness industry. It's kind of Wild West still. But,
yeah, and no barrier to entry.
Nope, not really. You know, $500 and a half an hour at a computer, more or less. But so you guys have really, I mean, you said you've been open for 8 years, but you guys have not only built a brand, but you guys really have, you just have like a central nervous system throughout the whole industry with all the people that have walked through that door in terms of interns and things like that. And even now with the staff that you guys have there now, it's kind of crazy. Like we mentioned, Brian St. Pierre, he's like kind of running things over at Precision Nutrition now.
Yeah, he's doing big things, but that's not a surprise. You knew Brian right from the start that he was here.
Yeah.
He was the definition of a go-getter.
No, for sure. So, you know, what's, I guess, kind of like, how many interns have you taken through those doors, and what's that process like? Because I've seen like in the past, like you got hundreds of applications for internships. I'd love to hear what that process is like and how you determine who to take on.
Sure. So I would say the total volume of interns we've seen isn't necessarily going to stack up even within several hundred of the bodies you guys have had through the door over at MBS City. Obviously, because we just haven't been in the game quite as long and our model's a little different, so we don't need quite as many. But where we are at, I'd say we're just about at the tipping point of about 100 interns who have made their way through our program.
Wow.
And there's a considerable amount of seasonality to the process. And I say that because obviously, I would assume this is similar for you guys as well. It's that the academic calendar tends to dictate the volume of the applications. And by that, I mean, for this summer, I got 157 applications for 6 spots. And that was a reflection of the fact that people want to get their intern experience in when they don't have a full curriculum of college classes or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. And we're not actually definitively working with just college interns, but they tend to make up a pretty good chunk of the applicants. And then at other times of the year, I mean, you'll see in those winter months, so our January through May internship, I might only get 25 to 35 applications for six spots. So we're talking about 5 to 6 times the volume in the summer, and then we see it drop down. And it's not to say that I can't find fantastic candidates out of 35 applications. I mean, that's still great volume, but it's just a different applicant pool. It's a different level of competition. And I mean, I'd assume that you've kind of seen that just by being around our facility enough that we always end up with great coaches.
Yeah.
It's just that, you know, totally different number as far as my inbox goes with applications. But I mean, if you look back at it early on, I think it was the intern class immediately after you. Were you with us in 2008?
Yeah.
Is that right? Like fall of 08? So in winter of 2009, I can't even use the term intern class because we had one intern. So you came out of a period when there were two of you. We got one application at that point, and it was a gentleman named Mike Roncarotti who walked through our door in a full suit with his Northeastern University folder in hand. And, you know, he had the Mike Roncarotti beard, and he walks through the door and he hand-delivered an application, and he was looking to intern and do his co-op through Northeastern with us. And you don't say no to your only intern applicant. And Mike was exceptional and very well liked. And here we are. Here we are. What six years later, and Mike is now an NBA champion. Yeah. So it's pretty crazy what some of our interns have achieved. And I'm pretty proud of the I wouldn't call it a who's who by any means, but it kind of the accomplishments of this intern alumni class as far as how they've impacted the field, starting with guys like yourself, and I'm sure Chris Howard would have had that type of impact on a broader level as well if we had swiped him up and put him on the payroll right around that same time. So I don't know if I got too long-winded with my answer or even answered your question.
No, totally. And I think when mostly know the interns that obviously I interned with Chris, and then, you know, for a couple months after, or really for like the next year, I ended up going to Boston Sports Club. So I still got back to, you know, your gym, to your facility as much as possible, because just you go from lifting with people that are much stronger with you, that are great coaches, to then having to lift by yourself in a health club. It sucks. And in just terms of the training environment, and just really, for me personally, like I know, you know, I'll be much more motivated if I have Eric, Cressy, and Tony, who are like incredibly, like way stronger than I am. Even you at the time were stronger than me in a lot of lifts, and still are. And being like, and being like, yeah, well, still like, man, I'm a strength coach or a personal trainer or whatever. Man, I should be able to at least, you know, go toe to toe with Pete, or, you know, make sure that I'm trying to, you know, live up to the standards of, you know, all these other great coaches, or even like just Brian, like, you know, with Brian, Tony, and Eric having three guys that are just incredibly strong, trying to at least keep up with them, was something that I always strived for. And then, you know, at that time, like I started seeing some of the newer interns that were coming in, whether it be like a Connor Ryan or even a Roger Lawson, and seeing these people come in and now to see where they are today, and just to know that, like, you know, I'm still, you know, friends with those guys, is pretty, like, I literally just had pizza with Connor Ryan in New York 2 days ago. So it's just great to see the kind of, like, you know, the family that you guys have built there, and just, it's just a really great class of, you know, people that have walked through that door and have just gone on to do some really, really cool stuff.
Yeah, I think maybe one of the coolest things that's come from this internship program that I didn't expect, and obviously it's somewhat new, as you know, is we've created this private intern alumni Facebook page.
Yeah.
And we use it purely initially just kind of to catch up with the guys. And on some level, Eric and I created it so that we could just have a list of former interns, that some place that's tangible where we can always look back and say, God, who interned with Kevin, or when Connor Ryan was here, who was in his intern class? Because it all becomes hazy after you've had 100 of them through the door. And basically that was initially that intent, just kind of a check-in on Facebook. Hey guys, hope you're well. Mm-hmm. Here's our list. And it's turned into this like brain dump where guys from all over the industry and girls are not just connecting to say, hey, what's going on, but if they come across a job posting that they think would be interesting for one of our alums, they throw it up there and say, hey, does anybody want me to make a connection? Or, you know, if they're looking for a referral in a specific part of the country, they're using it for that purpose, or if they're just looking to kind of bust balls and make fun of each other, so be it. But it's become such a fascinating resource because you've got guys like even the other day, Jordan Syatt gets on there and just says, "Hey, everybody, I want a book recommendation." Mm-hmm. And what happens? Like 60 different guys make a book recommendation or four. I mean, Jordan's probably got reading material for the next 3 or 4 years the way it happened. And it's just, it's really cool. I'm really proud of how quick everybody is to contribute and continue to be part of this CSP family concept, because I mean, yeah, you've been working at MBSC for almost 6 years here. And I'd say half the people in the fitness industry think that we're like mortal enemies just purely because of geographically where we're occupying a similar footprint. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, I mean, we have as good a working relationship as you possibly could imagine. And I mean, between you and Ben Bruno back when he was there,
that's
and
right.
Getting interns like Dave Rack and Connor Ryan, and you know, we've had this kind of collaborative mm-hmm. coaching development approach that's been really cool, and it's often reflected on that CSP intern alumni page.
Yeah, I think that is one of the biggest misnomers in this industry is that, you know, and we're really not that close. We're like a good 35, 40 minute drive apart, which in this, like in the world of fitness and strength and conditioning, might as well be 100 miles.
Sure.
Because people don't, I mean, some people, like I said, when I was, you know, interning there, I drove an hour back and forth. And even just to go lift sometimes, I'd be driving an hour back and forth. You know, some people, you know, will do that, but you know, I would say for 95%, you know, they're just going to, you know, type in strength and conditioning Woburn Mass or strength and conditioning Hudson and try to find something that's close to them. And just kind of make sure it's a good spot to go to. But, and even like Mike and Eric, they've worked a lot together in the past. They, you know, at the Perform Better seminars and things like that. I would say it's a great relationship. So let's talk about, like we were talking a little bit off air, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts. Like I always, whether it be interns that come here and then go there, or you know, people that are in town and they go and check out CSP and they come to MBSC and they hear that, like I interned at, you know, CSP and then ended up coming to work at MBSC. Like what are the big differences? And like I always tell them, like it's like 80% is the same in terms of like programming. There's a couple things that are a little bit different, but you know, you guys have a different business model. Maybe talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so it's obviously dramatically different in a lot of ways and extraordinarily similar in others. And I think that 80% that you talk about is obviously just an appreciation for attention to detail as it relates to exercise execution.
Yeah.
I mean, plain and simple, if you're I think you guys have a very similar open door policy to what we have for industry professionals who are looking to come in and observe our model. Mm-hmm. And we have them come through and there's two directions they go. They're either coming to us from MBSC or they're coming to us with the intention of going to MBSC next.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unbelievable there. If you're going to make the trip out to this part of the country, I guess, with the intent of seeing one facility, then it's crazy not to see the other. So in that sense, geographically, we are very, very close for people who are kind of doing what I would say, I think I was talking to Mark Fisher. He used the term fitness tourism. Yep. And basically hitting one facility after another. In that sense, yeah, we're very close. And those are the people who ask me how competitive we are with MBSC. But otherwise, when it comes down to the, you know, basically the geographic logistics of getting people through the door, like you mentioned, we have a certain radius of people that we're going to draw from who aren't specifically baseball players targeting a very specific training model. And we're just never going to butt heads with you guys over there because it's silly to even try to compete with an athlete from the North Shore while you guys have a stronghold on that area, just like you're not going to be drawing athletes from Worcester or south of our space.
Right.
But as far as the model goes, quickest way to describe the difference is going to be in the, I would say, the supervision and program design piece. Mm-hmm. So every athlete who comes through our door is going to be individually assessed, and then we're going to design training materials based on our findings. And following that, the training takes place in a semi-private group training model. So we set our client to coach ratio at a maximum of 5-1. Mm-hmm. And the first couple of weeks of training for every athlete is extremely coaching intensive, because oftentimes the programming reads like a foreign language, even if we are talking about someone who's been in the gym a bunch in the past. And so it's got a little bit more of a one-on-one type feel early on. But I think our clients really eventually get to a point where they pride themselves on being self-sufficient, and they don't want a coach telling them how to foam roll every time they come through the door, or teaching them how to do the same warm-ups or mobility or arm care stuff that they're already extremely familiar with. And on some level, which I think you'd probably agree with, clients kind of pride themselves on getting to a point where they can almost answer questions and start sharing insight with the athletes around them in the gym.
For sure.
Beyond that, like you've said, so at MBSC, you guys do a lot more volume than we do. You'll get more bodies through the door. I heard someone say, an intern say to me, who came over from Boyles and worked with us as well, and they said, a busy day here at CSP is going to be between 100 and 150 athletes on the training floor over the course of the day, whereas a busy day at MBSC could be 3 to 4 times that. And so we just plain don't have the capacity to be able to handle that type of foot traffic, mm-hmm. because the programming piece is so time consuming on the back end, or I should say the front end, before clients step foot in the facility, that if we had to hit that volume of kids through the door in a given day, God, I would need to multiply my staff by probably 4 times.
Exactly.
And it's just not our objective, just like you guys aren't interested in pulling it back and delivering to such a smaller population, because you've so effectively monetized the larger group training piece and offer, I'd say, a overarching programming approach that you yourself said that you're starting to contribute in the program design and so on. What's your take on that?
Well, I mean, that's pretty much what you said. And I think, you know, I think Mike and Bob have talked about this before. Like Bob is Mike's business partner, who kind of runs the day-to-day business stuff there. If they open up the facility today and they start again from zero, things might be maybe a little bit different in terms of the business model, in terms of like semi-private and stuff like that. But we have such an ingrained system that is like really successful. Like we sell out every summer. We're sold out. Like we run out of spots. So it's
sure.
It's not like we have necessarily a will to want to change things because business is not good. And same thing like we've heard is like, you know, you shouldn't be doing personal training anymore. You should only be doing semi-private stuff. You can make, you know, way more money with a semi-private model. Like, well, our personal training is maxed out. Like we can't take on any more personal training. Like we have a waiting list because we just don't have enough coaches for the times that people want to do personal training, even though we're charging like $90 an hour. So why change that model if it's working right now?
If it ain't broke.
Yeah. And in April, you know, like for us, it's, you know, I mean, I'm sure we're cool talking about this, but like our pricing models are different too. Where you guys charge more than we do, and we have a little bit different setup in terms of coach to athlete ratio. We go with like a 10-1. That changes based on the skill level of the participants in that group. If we have more people that are new in that group, we have more coaches. But like you mentioned, you have someone that has been coming to your facility for 9 months. It's like riding a bike. They know everything. They know how to do everything. And you just keep an eye on them to make sure that they're doing the weight that they should be doing and making sure that they're not doing anything that is, you know, not what they're supposed to be doing in terms of form or, you know, exercise selection, making sure that they're following the program. But the cool thing is that both models are incredibly successful, and, you know, it might work out differently. Like, and that's the thing that I'm trying to, you know, do with this interview is for people out there, you might need to figure out what model is going to be best for the population or the clientele that you want to serve and for the area that you're in as well, which I'm guessing, I mean, like I mentioned before, Pete, you're starting, you got your own website, petetupuy.com. I'll put in the show notes and stuff like that. But I'm guessing that's something that you might be getting into, is like trying to figure out what business model makes sense for people out there.
Yeah. And I think there's that discussion can go in a lot of different directions. And I would say that if you were to ask me how I handle my business consults and that sort of a deal, what my approach is, I'd actually tell you that I'm fairly similar to the way our pitching coordinator, Matt Blake, handles his pitching instruction. Mm-hmm. And I say that because Matt does not have a Matt Blake system per se. No one sees one athlete's delivery and says, oh, that's a Matt Blake guy. Right. What he does is he takes an athlete into the cage, you know, after they're thoroughly warmed up. He plays catch with them. He gets a feel for their mechanics and their tendencies. And then he takes their delivery and he makes it more efficient. He's not saying, this is wrong. He's saying, here's some modifications we can make. Here's how we can reduce injury risk. Here's how we can make you more efficient delivering a pitch, working with what you already have. And I guess that might be the biggest difference between me and we'll say other fitness business personalities right now, is that I don't have a system that I'm looking to tell you to implement. Right. Our model here at CSP is not easily recreated. And it's because, yeah, there are systems in place, and that's fine. I think our systems are just plain application of common sense. The difference maker for us is the people. And I think that's a good transition into kind of articulating my answer to your question, or your statement about how different areas require different models, or different facilities are going to require a different service model. And I completely agree. And I would say that the reason for that is because you need to identify the unique strengths of your staff, or if you're a one-man show, you got to figure out what your skill set is, and then you need to leverage that. And so we have intentionally staffed our facility with a lot of people who take a lot of interest in thorough assessment and very specific program design, be it for corrective exercise or purely performance enhancement, or if it's someone who showed up with FAI and requires a very unique attention to detail as it relates to their programming. That's what fascinates my guys. And in that sense, my staff requires a very specific type of model, which we built, you know, we built the team around that concept. So if I talk to someone about what's appropriate for their facility as far as their model goes, and they seem surprised when I say, you know, you need to integrate boot camps, or we call them strength camps here. Mm-hmm. And they say, well, that's everything that you guys preach against, and that's not individualized. And I say, you know, don't be a snob about this. I mean, yeah, the reality of the market is what it is. If there's money to be made in certain segments, and let's be honest, not that many facilities are in a position like us in MBSC where we're saying, God, we're at capacity. Mm-hmm. I mean, our facilities, we need to talk about operational efficiencies, not lead generation. We're talking about just plain reducing our overhead and making sure to continue monetizing these hundreds of athletes through the door. Mm-hmm. Other people are worried about keeping the lights on and making sure their team gets paid and making sure they hit, you know, they hit their payroll, or they cover people's benefits in that month, or they're bringing money home to pay their own mortgage. And those are the people where I'm going to say, let's acknowledge the realities of the market, and let's see where there are opportunities to collect some dollars, and let's leverage your staff's unique skill set and go from there. Because saying to yourself, okay, I need to know what the CSP model is because I'm going to go plug it in and hit go, is pretty much a death sentence if you don't have a very unique, specific collection of coaches on your team. Mm-hmm. What's your take on that?
No, I think that's spot on, because that's why we've even implemented, like, we're always trying out new things in terms of programming, and we do have like semi-private groups where it's more of a case of we're selling things like, all right, well, if you can get four people in a group, you're basically going to be getting, you know, personal training structure. You're going to get your individualized program, but you're going to be training in a semi-private model. So we don't say like we're not going to do it. We do it if the, you know, the case comes up. We have that system in place to bill for it and things like that, and also how to, you know, compensate the coach in terms of their hourly rate. And even we've kind of looked at things like we even started doing like an Airdyne class on Saturday mornings for people that just want to come in and do some like conditioning for a half an hour. We can do stuff in our, you know, room with all of our Airdynes. So we're always trying new things out. And at the same time, I think it's also a case of, you know, our coaches, I mean, it's kind of the testament to our staff too, is like we have coaches that are always learning new stuff. They are constantly reading things and, you know, watching seminars and going to seminars and having new ideas in terms of how we can do things. And people like watch our staff meetings and stuff like that. It's just, it's right there. You can see those ideas popping up. And To Mike's credit, you know, if he hears a good idea, he's like, yeah, let's try it. Like, what's the worst that can happen? Let's implement it, see if we can get some people. And these Airdyne classes are now fully booked.
Sure.
You know, it's just like you said, it's like finding what people like and just making sure it makes sense with our system and it still follows our philosophy.
Yeah, I completely agree. And you know what I really like about or a similarity I see between our two facilities, and I respect the fact that Mike and Bob are cool with it, is that we're not afraid to watch our team and encourage them to kind of build their own brand while under our umbrella.
Right.
And so be it, you know, Mike taking you on and saying, hey, the FitCast should continue to plow ahead as scheduled. That's an important piece of your personal and professional development. Mm-hmm. I love that because you don't see that at every facility. There are certain gym owners, be it commercial or private sector, where they're saying to themselves, you know, my guy shouldn't maintain a website and I don't need him writing a blog, or I don't need her worrying about publishing material outside of our space. And I think that's awful because, one, you're basically just saying, I own you, which is just a terrible message to send. And two, you're really kind of restricting their opportunity to collect information and publish their thoughts and become better coaches because they're stepping outside of your little bubble that you've created. Mm-hmm. And they're seeing what else is out there in this fitness industry where there's obviously hundreds of people putting out great content. So if you're going to hoard your people, keep them under your roof and just say, my system is the system, I don't want to see you having any type of presence on the internet, then all you're doing is saying, whatever day it is that I started this business, that's the year that I continue to reside in, we'll say scientifically or professionally or whatever it may be, because otherwise nobody's getting better. So if you look at our gym, I mean, you've got TonyGentleCore.com, you've obviously got EricCressy.com, you've now got the business director publishing material. You got Greg Robbins with the Strength House. You've got Miguel publishing the Enhanced to Dance stuff. I mean, there's a lot of material coming out of our facility on a daily basis. And all that does is make our coaches more, you know, more skilled when it comes time for a staff meeting where they discuss program design, or when it comes time for an in-service, we're bringing really fascinating, unique content. And it's also keeping us on our toes in the sense that we are always revising our approach as it relates to program design and programming philosophy. And it's because these guys are getting out there and going to seminars and coming back and challenging the status quo. And I get the impression that's the case over at MBSC, and it's definitely the case here. And I can tell you it's not quite as common as you'd think if you start to get out there and look at other people's models.
Yeah, I mean, just bouncing off of that, even you look at Mark Fisher is doing with his group over there, and they're obviously all working together and posting stuff on markfisherfitness.com, and they're encouraged to do writing. And you know, people ask me, like, I have been doing more like lectures and stuff like that, like PowerPoint stuff, and like the staff is coming up to me, it's like how did you do that and just like not. For public speaking, for a lot of people, is really tough.
Sure.
And just for me, it's like I just have the reps, like whether it be the podcast stuff or in terms of like just years of coaching, you get so comfortable speaking in front of a group. And like for this, like 50,000 people are going to listen to this. I'm sorry, I'm getting texts and my computer's making noises. But
you've always been a very popular person, Kevin.
You know what? It is. It's actually business stuff. So it just means I got more work to do later today. But you know, with that, even for people are like now at our facility, like our staff members, I did a talk on like building your brand, and because that is, it's super important, not just for yourself, but it's also going to help people. Or bring people into the gym. Like if like, oh, well, I know who Kevin Larrabee is. Like, oh, who works at MBSC. Let me see if I can, you know, get over there and get in a session with him or see if he has any availability. And for people at our gym, I talked about this another podcast a couple of days ago, but for a lot of our staff, like they come and they work at MBSC for like 3 years. Like it is, it's like 3 or 4 years. It's like a graduate program. You come in, you work for 3 or 4 years, you get a lot of coaching hours under your belt, you get a lot of knowledge, and then, you know, you go off and you do your own thing, whether it be opening, like we have so many people that have worked here or interned here, mostly like worked here, opened up their own facility or went and got a college strength and conditioning position or a minor league position, stuff like that. And it's so much easier to do that if you have that brand built in, because it's not just people knowing you, but also passive income, like making sure that you can write an article, use an affiliate link or something like that, and make some extra money that like isn't charging your fan base or your listenership or your readership anything more. It's just making sure that you can actually make it in this industry, because if you're a personal trainer or strength coach, especially if you're a strength coach and you're working for a college or something like that, you're not getting paid a lot. So
sure. It's a labor of love.
Exactly. You got to figure out a way to, you know, make ends meet, depending on what you're doing and where you're living. And, so start a YouTube page, start talking into, just don't be one of those a-holes that is like driving their car and talking into their phone. I hate that. Stop doing that. If you're listening to this and you're one of those people, and I know like I'm friends with some of you people on Facebook, and you're filming yourself while driving to like post on Facebook, focus on the goddamn road, for the love of God.
I think I know the exact individual or individuals you speak of right now.
There's multiple people, and they're in this industry, and like even, or at least just like have the decency to sit in front of your laptop and do this stuff. You're not that busy. Don't worry about it. Trust me, I run three businesses right now. I can, if I need to shoot a video or do a podcast, I can do it while standing still, sitting in front of a computer or something like that.
Kevin, how are they going to know how important you are if they can't see the trees going by and their dog isn't like climbing on their lap in the shot? And
well, it's also like, don't shoot it in terms of portrait. Do landscape like a television. You guys have had HD televisions for 10 years. You've seen movies for your whole life. You know what video is supposed to look like. It's not supposed to be tall. It's supposed to be long. For the love of God, for someone that edits video for part of his job, geez, just stop.
That speaks to a little bit of where there's tons of opportunity in this industry for guys like us. So I think that one of my biggest points of frustration with this field, and it's not really a point of frustration, but it's an opportunity all the time for us to look good, is just paying attention to detail. You don't see people concerning themselves with the aesthetics of the material they're putting out, or oftentimes right down to the grammar. And I think that regardless of how valuable or unique or authentic or, you know, groundbreaking your content is, sometimes that message can get lost in the fact that you're using a crummy presentation of your content. And as much as it frustrates me, it's a pretty big piece of the reason why our brand has become recognized nationally or whatever it may be, and why we own such a big piece of the puzzle, or we've captured a specific niche. And it's because we put out a professional product. And you know that if we're going to publish something, Eric's going to have been all over someone's case about their grammar or whatever it may be. I mean, I posted a blog a couple weeks ago and I got a text from him that just said, subject line, good read. And then the content just said, it's possessive. it apostrophe s means it is. And that's not something I didn't know, but I made a mistake. Eric spotted it and he got on me before anyone had even read it. And that's a difference in everyone's thought process, but that's a big differentiator when a lot of people are competing on price in what is essentially a competitive market here that is fitness. You can differentiate by simply paying attention to detail, and that's not a lot of work. So sorry for the rant, one of my biggest pet peeves.
We were a tag team in that. So I apologize if you feel offended for anyone that is doing that right now. Just all you have to, it's fine that you did it. I'm sure you got great content, but just from now on, you know, I hate it when people are just like, it almost looks like you're trying to look like you're so busy you don't even have enough time to give a crap about the content that you're producing. Then you don't care about the content you're producing. Just make sure you can put some more effort into that stuff, folks.
Sure. I would even go as far as to say that this leads me to kind of my second pet peeve, is it's people who are concerning themselves with building their brand before they have created kind of, we'll say, career capital or some recognition for what they've done on the training floor. Mm-hmm. And I've been working this morning all morning. I'm putting together a presentation that I'm going to be doing later this fall, where it's essentially business before branding. And I'm starting to kind of crunch the numbers. And I was looking at how many training sessions we coached and how many athletes we had through the door before we opened a Twitter account or before I put my first company Facebook page on the internet and all that stuff. And we're talking thousands. And some of that was a function of the fact that these social networking platforms weren't big players at the time. But some of it was because we were so concerned with running an efficient business with clean and functional systems and getting our hands on athletes and you know, accruing hours on the training floor, so that when the time came for us to throw up a Twitter page, it was a lot easier for us to get to 20,000 followers because we had a foundation to stand on, credibility based on coaching experience and hours, as opposed to having just declared ourselves gurus. And, oh, you know, slapping a cool logo on the internet and saying it's time for you all to listen to me because I have brilliant ideas.
Yeah, I think there's a big difference between, you know, starting a blog and giving out free information and then putting together, a difference between that and just giving out free information versus, you know, saying, you know, I'm an expert. Now I'm writing an ebook. It's $69.97 or upsell to $99 or something like that. Like, that's something you got to be super careful about because – like, I know people in this industry that have tried to go through the product route too early, and you know, it really damages their reputation because of the quality of the product is not there, and then also they just look like someone who has a new product every 3 months that is trying to get the 1,000 sales so they can just then not do anything for the next 3 months.
Yeah, and then it just comes across as this. I've been referring to some of these business options that you have in this industry as like fitness pyramid schemes.
Right.
All you're focused on is lead generation and creating an identity that doesn't really exist.
Well, man, like, you haven't even talked about any of the questions that got sent in, but that's usually a good thing. That means that the conversation is going forward. So, you know, one thing that I thought would be interesting to talk about before we get into that is just I think I had Eric on maybe about a year ago now, and you guys had changed the name from Cressy Performance to Cressy Sport Performance. What was up with the name change? Why did you guys go in that direction?
Well, I guess you could say there were two reasons. I think if you follow Eric's material regularly, you're obviously aware of the fact that we have two facilities now. So as we expanded our footprint and we went from being just in Massachusetts to having an additional facility in Jupiter, Florida, it came time for us to start thinking of ourselves as more of a national brand as opposed to a local entity here in Hudson, Mass. And so it made a little bit of sense to go to this Cressy Sports Performance concept in the sense that it seemed like we were changing the scope of our model. The second reason for that is a lesson in trademarking. I can tell you that we did not pull the trigger on trademarking our model, this CP or CP family concept, as early as we should have. And when the time came, it had been grabbed, and it had been grabbed by a fairly big identity within the industry. And you know, we just didn't have the same depth in our pockets for challenging that process to go through the, we'll say, the legal system to acquire 100% ownership of this CP concept in the fitness industry. So we took a look at our logo and we saw that, hey, you know, there's kind of an S in there. And if you aren't really familiar with our logo, but you're sitting at a computer here listening to the FitCast, I'd encourage you to search, go to CressyPerformance.com. And as you can see, we haven't fully transitioned that to CressySportsPerformance.com, which we're in the process of. But go and look at our logo and you'll see that there is absolutely an S in there. And it was always sitting there. So we said to ourselves, that's our smoothest transition in branding that we can make. We throw a word into the process as opposed to changing the entire identity of kind of the logo of our brand. And that's the 2-point reason for it. But if there's one takeaway, and I said this at the fitness summit out in KC, it was how I started my presentation, teach them a lesson. I said, go out and trademark your stuff today, because we learned the hard way. It's a couple $100 and it's kind of a frustrating process because our systems are so antiquated, but it's not a decision that you would regret. I can tell you that.
Yeah. Good call. Good advice. You know, if you're looking to put together your brand even before you open the gym, maybe trademark that stuff first.
totally come across as a hypocrite because I just said start a business before you worry about your brand. But in this sense, you got to protect yourself.
Yeah, you got to protect the words. So I'm trying to think, where do I want to jump next? So yeah, we'll throw in a couple questions from people. We got one question from Twitter. Just thoughts on jumping to your own training facility from working at a gym. Also, any common mistakes with that transition and tips for success?
Oh, God, there's thousands of common mistakes and I would say moments where you do it too early. I think the first thing I'd say is to don't just come to a conclusion that you hate the commercial setting so much that you're above it. Because there are ways to be immensely profitable in that setting. And as you continue to stay there, you're not paying to insure a facility. You're not paying for equipment. You're not paying to keep the lights on. All you're doing is giving a piece of your collected session total to your employer, and then you're keeping a chunk for yourself. And as much as I'd say 99 out of 100 of these trainers are saying that they feel like that piece that they're giving away is too big, they're paying for the opportunity to not worry about the back scenes stuff that has to happen to run a space like this. And if you were to ask Eric why he took on a business partner, he'd tell you, because I hate paying the bills. I hate chasing clients for money. I hate worrying about re-upping our insurance plan every year. I hate dealing with the landlord. You name it, he hates it. Well, that's the stuff that I'm good at, and that's stuff that I do. But if you make that jump, you are openly making a statement that you're ready to embrace that piece of the puzzle, because there's no one to do it but you initially. Mm-hmm. And it's a lesson that can kind of sting, because everybody thinks that it's like, you know, I'm just going to open my place. I'm going to set my own hours. I'm going to train athletes, and you know, I'm not working for the man anymore. Well, you got to have an appreciation for the fact that the man was doing a lot of the stuff that you don't want to do for you. And I think a great example, if you want to talk to somebody who has just figured this out, go talk to Dean Somerset. I've never seen a guy with a better deal in a commercial setting and a better setup. I mean, the guy is just, he's killing it. And he's totally comfortable and thriving within that setting. And if you have a good understanding with your employer, I mean, you can do great things. So don't assume that it can't work. Beyond that, so you have made the decision to open your own space, and there are a lot of different ways you can approach that. The question is, like, are we talking about somebody who's signed a lease, or are we talking about someone who's ready to make the jump and get into it? I think the most valuable insight I can give you maybe right now would be from people who are considering making the jump, and they've decided they're going to do it. They just got to figure out where to start. And my piece of advice would be to start small. And if you look at the way we got going, our first facility was under 2,500 square feet. It was a dungeon. It was not a place where you'd say, God, come on in and see my beautiful space. But what it served as was the foundation of our culture and this family concept that we have, because people loved training there. And when we moved into this new space, we're actually in a different unit than the one we moved into in 2008. But in the space that you coached in as an intern, Kevin, I had a lot of pushback from the regulars who didn't want the upgraded facility. And their reasoning was that they didn't want us to lose touch, that personal touch we had. And they didn't want to feel like they're getting lost in the shuffle as we were upsizing. And we actually went from 2,500 to 6,600 square feet. And even at that time, as we had outgrown a 2,500 square foot space in 7 or 8 months, we were still overreaching a little bit in that 6,600 square foot space. And it was a calculated decision, and we were projecting toward being able to be just fine, but it was still a risk. And I think new business owners who are jumping into this are often really excited about the look and feel of their space before they're worried about profitability. And you know, if you come into our gym, it is bare bones to this day. We got 5 power racks, we got a couple racks of hex dumbbells, and then we got a bunch of rubber mats on the floors where people deadlift. Like, we don't even have platforms here. We keep it simple, and on some level, our programming philosophy is very simple, our training model is very simple, but simple is efficient, it's manageable, it's easy to keep clean, and, you know, we just decided, hey, there isn't $100,000 in the budget to put toward Kaiser equipment. So we're going to go a different route. And I don't know that every new facility owner does that. So best piece of advice I can make is, if you're jumping in and you are all in and you've already kind of burned a bridge with your employer, then it's time for you to start thinking about how small can you go while still taking good care of your clients, because it's easier to buy yourself out of a lease on a small space because you have too much demand to be able to function in it than it is to default on a large lease because you couldn't fill it.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Jeez. That's surprising, because I even like the facility that you have now, or the space, I should say, that you guys have now, like, it's not like gigantic, and you can still see everyone on the floor. There's no like walls or anything like that. So you're still, you know, pretty much going to be, you know, within clear eyesight of your coach, or, you know, even everyone that's training there. So you can still get a pretty, you know, close knit feel.
Sure. And that's, you know, that's a whole other discussion when you start getting into facility design and attitudes as it relates to that. I know Mike's got a product on facility design. I know I have some very firm opinions on layout and that sort of a deal. I mean, like I said, I'm an outsider in the sense that I've never coached an athlete, yet I'm the one who designed the footprint of all three of our facilities to this point.
And moved the equipment in.
Exactly. And so, and again, I used the term application of common sense earlier in the discussion. That's where I go when I'm thinking program design. What's the most practical flow of foot traffic as it relates to the space? And let's go. And it's just, you know, I think we're a lot less worried about being bells and whistles and, you know, really glamour space than we are about creating an environment where it's great to just crank up the music, open the garage doors, you know, pull out the chalk bucket and have everybody deadlifting and getting after it.
And let me do this, because we're at about we're getting close to an hour. So what I'm going to do is, we're going to table this discussion, and now you know, like with other guests in the past, you guys have kind of an idea of what these this segment would be like. So I want you to send in, you know, more questions and topics for Pete to @FitCast on Twitter, or just go to the contact page at thefitcast.com. And I think what we should do is probably table it for now and then come back and do another one of these.
Sure. Yeah, we could obviously talk for hours about this stuff. And it's like when I do consults, I make people send me their list of questions in advance. Right. So I can run through the list and say, let's just have you read this article, or, you know, I can cover that with a quick email, and then we get into the meat and potatoes. So it'd be awesome to have a nice thorough list of stuff that we could cross off next time we hop on.
Yeah, let's do that. And just before we do go, quick heads up for people that are supporting the show at patreon.com/thefitcast. Got a giveaway for you folks this week. I'm going to be giving away a brand new Polar A300 fitness and activity tracker with heart rate monitor. The great folks at Polar sent me two of these over, and I've had one on for the last couple of weeks. It's absolutely fantastic. It's when I was complaining about the Apple Watches tracking not being up to snuff for me personally. It's not really there just yet. Hopefully they're going to make improvements. But Polar has a great product right now, and it runs about $150. And they're not like a sponsor of the show or anything. You just sent me two of these over, and I figured I might as well give one of these away to people that are supporting the show through Patreon, like Travis Pollen or Michelle, I'm not even going to try to say your last name. It's SKIE something. I'm not even going to try to say it.
Devin,
yeah, Devin Nielsen, Dale Hill, David Wilson, Susan House, you guys that have now just recently jumped on, and Guy Bortz also just jumped on to start supporting the show at patreon.com. That's patreon.com/thefitcast, where you get extra bonus content on there as well, and episodes at least 1 week early. To enter this, you must be a Patreon supporter. And what I need you to do is log into Patreon, and you're just going to click send message. Once you go to the FitCast Patreon page, you can send a message through there to me and just let me know that you want to enter the contest. And I will get a winner through random number drawing next week. So that is that's that. And also, like I mentioned before, you can go to petepuy.com. And for those that did not take French, that is petedupuis.com. That's French, right?
Yeah, French Canadian, and Pete is God knows what. But and also, if you want to hit me up on Twitter, it's a good way to throw those questions at me as well, because I'm also kind of looking for content ideas a lot of the time, because the answers are up top, but I don't really know what the questions are every time. So that's Pete_Dupuy.
Awesome. And yeah, Matt, Kevin, Larrabee, and don't forget, obviously, thefakecast.com is where you can get all these episodes. You can go onto iTunes. You can subscribe to the show on there to make sure that you get every new episode as they come out. For Patreon supporters, you get your own RSS feed. So the same thing, but you get those episodes early plus the extra content. And what I'm going to do is at the end of this episode for Patreon supporters, you're going to get, I believe it's about a 20-minute segment with Eric Cressy, with just some like random stuff that we talked about in April. I don't think I ever put this out, so I'm going to attach it to the end of this episode. So it's like a little extra bonus for those Patreon supporters. So Pete, you said you were speaking at Kansas City. So are you planning on doing more talks in the future?
Yeah, I'm going to be kicking off the presentations at our fall seminar here. Eric and I will be bookending the Cressy Sports Performance Fall Seminar, which is going to be on September 13th. And I believe, I'll pull up what my subject matter is, because I got a couple presentations in the works here. But I believe at that one, I'm going to cover the 5 best and 5 worst decisions we've made as far as business owners go. And that's kind of our typical fall material. And then I'm going to be down in Kansas City at the, I believe it's called the Elite Fitness Summit, the one Ryan Ketchum and their crew's organizing. Awesome. Down in Louisville. I'll be at that in October. And that's the presentation I was talking about earlier today, where I said I'm focusing on business before branding, which I think is a really good message. So, either way, I'd love to, if I do cross paths with those people or people who are listening at those seminars, I'd love to chat. And I'm also planning on connecting with you, Kev, down at Perform Better, because I'm going to be down there on Friday in Providence on right. I think it's July 17th. So hopefully if any FitCast listeners want to grab a cup of coffee, I'm around.
Awesome. Well, yeah, make sure to do all that. And Pete, thanks for not bringing up any kind of benching stuff.
We'll get there next time.
bench pressing stories with Kevin Larrabee and Pete next time. But
yeah, worth tuning in.
And again, as always, thank you everyone for downloading and for listening. Start getting in those questions and topics, and we'll definitely do another one with Pete. And until next time, have a great week. We'll see you then.
Good chatting, Kev.
Time for having fun. I'm gonna party hard until the sun comes up. The music feels so good. Dancing is what I love. We feel the heat tonight. The mood is feeling right until the sun comes up. We're gonna party hard.
All right, so we're back with another agenda-free FitCast for those Patreon supporters out there. And before we record a new episode of the FitCast, I'm going to be talking with Eric Cressy. Eric, how you been?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. So I don't know if we've talked on the show since you brought 2 new Cressys into the world. I guess Anna brought 2 new Cressys into
yeah,
the world.
Yeah, she did the hard work.
but I guess, how's it? It's been 2 months or 3 months?
Actually, they're just over 4 months. Wow. They were 4 months on Friday. So yeah, we were joking. They came the day after Thanksgiving. So we got a Black Friday 2-for-1 special at the hospital. But yeah, it's interesting. It's a whole different world. Like everyone told me it would be, but most of the people that tell you it's a whole different world are people who have had one baby at a time. And when you have twins, it's kind of like all bets are off. You really can only listen to people who have had twins and understand your world.
So it's not like something you can only prepare so much for it. So what's it been like? Has there been anything you're like, yeah, I just had no idea it was going to be like this, or has it been, you know, easier than you thought or harder?
Just different, I think. I mean, I knew it was going to be unbearably hard. We were really, really fortunate to have quite a bit of help from family over the first, you know, really like 10 weeks. And ours was a little bit unique because the girls came early. So Addison, our second baby, had some trouble with like breathing and eating at the same time. So she had to stay in the NICU for like 4 days. So one of the blessings to that was that the nurses at the hospital, who are awesome, they kind of helped us to get them on the same schedule early on. And anyone who has like multiple babies will tell you like it's all about schedule. Like you literally can't deviate. Like I can't go out to dinner nowadays because bath time is 7:30. We give them a bottle at 8. We try to get them to bed by 8:30 or 8:45. And if we don't do that, it literally just ruins our night of sleep and I'm a cranky mess on the next morning. So, you know, I look back at all those years, I maybe busted my buddy's chops when they had kids and maybe they weren't fun and they didn't come out or they didn't come into Lyft or whatever it was. And I totally get it now because you have a lot of competing demands and you just can't mess up a 4-month old baby's schedule, otherwise they'd make you pay for it.
How did your dog Tank take to the new ones?
You know, here's an interesting lesson on stress. So Tank has been raised by baseball players, lived in him, has like lived a life all along, and you know, we kind of turned his world upside down because we moved to Florida in the fall, back in September, to start up the new facility, and Anna was pregnant at the time. And what was interesting is Tank's actually had these kind of benign growths on his back right leg for years, and we've had veterinarian after veterinarian look at it, and basically they've all said it's benign, you don't really need to worry about it. And the girls came November 28th, and literally in about the 5 weeks after they came, like lots of waking up in the middle of the night, baby's screaming, he's not getting like the same kind of attention he always got, the growth on the back of his leg probably tripled in size.
Oh.
Got a lot bigger. He started like, he never really paid attention to him. He started like nipping at them and pulled all the hair out, and they're kind of like these unsightly skin tags. So we finally actually had to proactively go in and get him removed. So Tank's actually rocking a cone of shame now and has like this huge scar down his back leg that's both stitched and stapled now. But I look at it and I'm like, wow, we changed his world psychologically, and it actually had what we would think would be really significant physical ramifications, like what may have been a benign tumor, kind of got a lot bigger. So kind of like a interesting lesson in stress.
Yeah. It would,
but he's doing great though. Yeah.
You also moved to Florida, I guess. Well, really now you're doing, are you doing like basically 6 and 6 months, or is it like 9 and 3? What's
the schedule? It's like 8 and 4 probably. We're here in Florida from basically September through early to mid April, and then back up in Massachusetts during the summertime when the college crowd's kind of going like, really busy at the facility up there. So, you could kind of say that we're early 30s snowbirds at this point.
So have you enjoyed the move down to Florida? Was that really a hard transition, or was it just like, yeah, it's nice out every day now?
Yeah, it was a leap of faith, in the sense that, you know, you always wonder what's going to happen with the old facility, and those guys have done awesome. I mean, it's definitely been a lot of work. It took a lot more time and effort and money to get it off the ground than we would have originally expected, but it's been really rewarding. It's hard to say like how we feel about Florida because we haven't had a true Florida winter. We were inside changing diapers, staying up all night, and things like that. So we only really got to enjoy it, you know, like we probably would just more recently, and like being able to take the girls outside and do more stuff like that. So, it's been a really rewarding experience. It's been an opportunity to interact with a lot of new athletes and kind of spread our message and hopefully help a bigger population segment. So, I don't regret it at all. It's been a good fit.
So, with a lot of these like shows that I'm doing for the Patreon people, it tends to like get a little off topic. So I'd like to ask you a couple things first. You know, like, have you been asking? Yeah, have you been reading anything? Like, have you had the time to, you know, do some any recreational stuff outside of, you know, raising two newborns?
Yeah, I mean that's obviously the majority of our time. I'm a geek. I can't not try to stay on top of things. Mm-hmm. What's actually probably been more helpful for me are like audiobooks, things like that. Where I'm really fortunate is at our Massachusetts facility, we always film our staff and services every Wednesday morning. And some of those go into our online thing, but some of them are just kind of on Vimeo for me to watch. So, I can kind of chime in and literally just put it on my laptop while I'm feeding a baby or doing whatever and kind of listen in on that. I always have an audiobook going. So I have, you know, a 12-minute commute to the facility every day. So I've kind of like, I mean, put it this way, it's March 30th right now, and I'm just about to finish my 6th book on tape. So, you know, that for me was really, really important to make sure that we're still, you know, kind of staying the course in terms of finding places to get continuing education. And, you know, we stay on top of it as best as we can, but you're right. It's definitely a lot harder than when you could just decide, all right, I'm going to tune out for an hour and a half and I'm going to go read a book or, watch, you know, YouTube videos or whatever it was that helped you to get continuing education in the past.
Any books that you'd recently listened to you'd recommend?
Yeah, you know, one that I really liked actually touches back on the stress conversation from a little bit earlier is Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers. Yeah. It's an old book, and I was joking. I talked with Robertson last week that I'm almost like ashamed that I didn't read it until now. But actually, Connor Ryan was the one that mentioned it in conversation. I was like, man, I really haven't covered that. And I went back, and it's a long one. I mean, I think it was like 17 hours of listening, but just a really good overview of kind of how stress impacts your body and a good comprehensive look at all the research out there. So that was one that I literally just finished up about a week and a half ago that I thought was really, really good and long overdue for me.
How about any movies, any kind of like TV? Like, again, do you even have like time to even sit down and like watch something on TV at all?
Wow. I put it this way. I think probably the extent of my viewing is like my wife watches TV a lot with like the like when she's breastfeeding. So I'm usually like in the background, like I might hear some of it. Usually it's like The Voice or something like that. So in terms of actually watching TV, no, but as an interesting aside, I actually watched the movie Ted with my mother-in-law when she was here. So if there was a way to make a hilarious movie somewhat awkward, it's to watch it with your mother-in-law and just see like how is she going to respond when we have these really inappropriate sexual innuendos being mentioned every 10 seconds. So that was at least very entertaining, even though I'd already seen it.
Yeah, that's a movie that's always interesting. I mean, watching R-rated movies with family members or parents can always get a little little weird. So yeah, like you said, you've kind of gone down to Florida, you've more or less given the keys to, I guess, Pete and Tony and yep. Greg up in, yep. I guess, in Hudson. Yep. So have you learned anything from that for people who are maybe have one facility now and they're looking to maybe, yeah. you know, branch out?
Absolutely. You know, I've always said that the thing that has made me better at what I do that I wish I had done earlier was learn to delegate. Mm-hmm. And that was a big reason our business was successful in the first place is that, you know, I had to step away from being the guy who was, you know, doing the scheduling and swiping the credit cards and this, that, and the other. And Pete took that over. And that was like the first opportunity for me to really delegate. And it allowed us to grow our business exponentially. And, you know, obviously having Tony on board, you know, to help out with some of the clients. And, you know, we've kind of slowly built over the course of time. And, you know, that's what I had to do by coming down here. And what was really, really important, though, is we had 7 years to build the systems that ran that facility. And all those guys that were on the staff, you know, were guys who had been trained through our internship program and had a lot of experience on the floor, and I trusted them. So, you know, when I first came down, one of the things I did do was I had multiple trips back up there. I came down here September 3rd, and between then and November 4th, I was actually back in Massachusetts for 3 to 4 days, three separate times. And then we kind of had to shut down travel because the babies were coming. But I went back up. I checked in as much as I could. But, you know, I don't claim to take credit for it, but they did unbelievably. Double-digit growth every month as compared to the previous year. My business partner, Greg, Chris, all those guys, like they really stepped up. We brought Miguel back on staff, who was one of our former interns, and he kind of, you know, took some of the workload that, you know, opened up when I left, and just really, really impressive job. And what was kind of cool for me was, you know, when I saw that happen, it was kind of interesting in the sense that instead of becoming just like a head strength coach at a facility, it kind of shifted my role to almost like a brand ambassador, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, it freed up opportunities for me to do a little bit more business development stuff. And, you know, same thing I hope is going to happen when I head back up there. You know, the guys down here, Brian and Shane and Tim, are really going to, you know, take the lead on, you know, doing the exact same thing and taking like an ownership stake here. But it's just been cool goes to show you that you never know really what people are capable of until you got to kind of push them in the deep end sometimes. And, you know, when I was in Massachusetts, I was always there to answer the difficult questions. You know, when there was a call from a physical therapist or a surgeon or whatever it was, I was a call I would field. You know, I was kind of the one that took all the really, really tough stuff. And it wasn't because they were capable of doing it. It was just because I was, you know, like a little bit of a type A, I don't want to say micromanager, but I was just the one that wanted to make sure everything went perfectly. And when I stepped away, it gave those guys an opportunity to, you know, to kind of step up. And like, I got a call from Pete last week, and we were just talking about whatever, but he's like, you know, Chris Howard is unbelievable with talking with parents of 12 to 15 year old athletes. Mm-hmm. Like he just said that. I'm like, that's awesome. You know, we never would have known it, but he just has like this demeanor about him that, you know, he's like, so whenever a parent in that age group has a question, I literally just grab Chris. And we never would have known that, because in the past he would have come and grabbed me because he knew I knew how to say the right things or things like that. So it's actually really wildly reassuring that those guys have been able to not miss a beat. And the other thing that I think has actually been really, really important for us that's allowed us to do it is, Pete, you know, early on, he was our business director, but really he was like business director slash office manager. You know, he was looking more long term, but in reality, he was more caught up in the day to day stuff of answering the phone, scheduling, billing, invoicing, collecting payments, things like that. And just a couple of years ago, really, we moved to the new facility. We shifted and we brought on a true office manager and let him go to a business director role. So our office manager, Stacy, has been awesome. Like, she's literally changed our business overwhelmingly to allow Pete to do a little bit more in terms of everything, social media to really like staff interaction. So he can almost become like a human resources guy. So having two people on the business side of things, like most new businesses don't need to do it. But for us, we had gotten big enough that it was an absolute necessity to allow him to really free up and do his thing. So I look at her, you know, role as wildly profound, even though you might not see her writing programs or out on the training floor coaching it. The behind the scenes stuff is very, very important.
With all this stuff going on, obviously time management comes into play. Do you have like a structure, any tips that you think anyone could adapt?
Yeah. You know, I think the first thing is, like, you have to ask yourself what is really, really important. You have to learn how to prioritize. And, you know, for me, that's it's actually been a question that I never knew how to ask myself until I got to the point where I'm like, wow, my wife is at home with two screaming babies right now by herself. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that I could possibly do right now that would be more importantly than going home and helping her? You know, so you kind of, it puts it in perspective, like, oh, am I going to stick around? Am I going to write this program at the facility, or am I going to go home, help her, and then, you know, I'll write it at 11 p.m. or something after we're done putting it to bed? So it really forced me to really heavily prioritize. And it's you know, unfortunately, in some capacities, it's been tough because I've always, I think, built our business we over-deliver as much as we can, and we're very accessible. And I look back and that was a blessing, but at the same time, it was a little bit of a burden, because by becoming so accessible, you realize that you spend a huge chunk of your time basically giving out free information. Mm-hmm. And that's not a criticism of the people that reach out. They're asking for genuine help, and I gave it for a long, long time. But, you know, if there's an email from a dude in Eastern Europe that wants to know why his biceps aren't growing, I would love to help him. But the truth is that there's nothing that he could possibly ask me that would be more pressing than spending time with my daughters. So prioritization, I think, was the big thing. But I think probably more significantly, and this is something that everybody that I've ever talked to has had kids has said, is that it's just about getting more efficient. You realize how much time time you spend screwing around. Mm-hmm. Like, just waking up while you're drinking your coffee, popping on Facebook and scrolling through your feed, or really like anything like that. Like, for me, I just try to be more efficient. Like, if I'm shaving, I'll pop on an audiobook while I'm doing it. Yep. You know, if I'm doing whatever, I try to double task as much as I possibly can where reasonable. But when it's time to write programs, it's like, all right, you're going to close the internet browser and you're going to write these five programs now. You're going to get them done and then you're going to move on. So it's just, you get very, very good at being efficient and really tuning out the stuff in your life that you realize is like, wow, this is just wasted time on a regular basis.
Yeah, it's funny. I always walk around with my iPhone in my pocket with like a book or a podcast playing to make sure I can always be listening to something, just because otherwise it's like wasted time.
Yeah. And I look at it as an opportunity is travel. And I've only had a little bit of it since the girls have come, but just like anytime I'm on a plane, I'm never sleeping. And I mean, don't get me wrong, unless I'm exhausted, but for the most part, it's listening to an audiobook or it's getting programming done. I do a ton of work on the plane. I know that's something Mike Boyle's talked about a lot too, is I remember him writing an article talking about, make sure you get the extra fortified battery so that you get extra work done. And he's 100% on point. And that's another one that I really like about Mike is, if you look back on the history of Mike Boyle and Eric Gressy exchanges via email, I think every one of them has taken place before 7 a.m. He's up at the crack of dawn, and I look at how productive he's been over the years, and I want to continue to model that. And that's what you have to do. So probably three times a week when those babies wake up at 5 a.m., we give them a bottle and it's 5:15 and I have to make that decision. Do you want to go back and sleep for a couple hours or do you want to get up and work? And, mm-hmm. you know, I was up before 5 three times this past week and it was a very productive week. So you just kind of – you learn to get more efficient. You learn to find holes in the schedule. And for me – probably another thing that should be really mentioned heavily is my wife stepped away from her job for a while. So she brought on a practice partner up in her Massachusetts location and she didn't practice while we were down here. So she's going back to work now that we're back up in Massachusetts this summer and she's going to be seeing patients 2 to 3 days a week and you know, getting back to what she went to school to do. I mean, she spent 9 years in school to become an eye doctor. And you know, so those are days when I'm going to spend time with the girls and I'm going to be kind of like daddy daycare. And I'm excited about it, but at the same time, it means the rest of my life's going to have to get a lot more efficient because you can't just set two screaming babies down so you can go and write a blog post, you know?
Well said. Well, we'll wrap it up there. We're going to go record the show for everyone else, but thank you to everyone that is listening. And if you're listening, you're a supporter. So thank you so much for that. And yeah, thank you, Eric.
No worries. Thank you.